Hello, everyone. I'm Dennis Nance. I'm an alcoholic.
Yes.
See, y'all have got a nice schedule laid out. And you notice Don didn't call me his friend like he did the rest of these guys. But I appreciate being asked and invited back to the Allatoona Roundup. My home group is the Queen City Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and my sobriety date is February 1st of 1981. And I want to thank you for allowing Libra and I to share this weekend with you. I want to thank the committee and Don and Becky. It's good to see Charles and Buddy again, and a lot of other Thomas and a lot of other people that I've seen around the state over the years. As a matter of fact, those that haven't met her already, I'd like for you to meet Libra. So I need you to know that I have the basic essentials of sobriety. I have everything I came here to get. I've got a woman and a driver's license. That's what I took me a while to get them, you know. Yeah. Couldn't keep both of them at the same time for a while, but I got one tonight. And looking over the events, y'all know how to make a brother feel welcome, I tell you. First thing I noticed was fried chicken on the menu. And we're having watermelon after this. My kind of place. Yeah. I like living sober. And before I get started talking about things I don't know, I just want to tell you the one thing I'm sure of. I'm positively sure that I'm sober today by the grace of a loving God who has manifested himself in my life for quite some time in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, and a continuously growing and widening circle of friends like yourself. Now, I don't know what else I'm going to say tonight, but I thought you might want to know that. I need to tell people that because sometimes they think I'm sober because of my own resources. Were it not for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and the God of my understanding and many people like yourself who have come to me bearing blessings and you didn't even know it, wouldn't be here tonight. But I got here too soon, I think. I just didn't like being here. I wasn't ready to quit drinking. I came here because they were after me. And I ain't figured out who they was, but they ain't caught me yet. And folk just wouldn't mind their own business. I found myself 27 years old on the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And back then, it looked a little different than it does now. People wore sport coats and ties to meetings. And, you know, most of the guys, I hated old timers, just didn't like them. They seemed to be, didn't seem to be genuine at all. I had never seen anybody that happy in a long time. They talked about being sober 3, 4, 5 years. And they were just happy. There were a couple around, Lou H. and Genevieve L. Both of them had been sober over 20 years, and they just seemed to be so happy about it. I didn't see anything good about having to quit drinking. But I noticed things. I noticed these guys all seemed to be old. I had questions whether they had ever drank or not. I didn't know liquor had been around that long. They seemed to have nice teeth. I didn't know they had bought them, but they had, all of them had nice teeth. The thing I noticed about these guys is they got to the meeting early. Took my seat on the back row. Wouldn't move. Stayed there. The soft seats. And as the meeting began, I began to watch them. I spent a lot of time in Alcoholics Anonymous, watching them watch me. And they were consistent. They listened intently. I thought they were going to sleep, but as the tunes were read, they closed their eyes sometimes and listened. Sometimes you'd hear their lips, see their lips moving. And my thinking was, you know, I believe these guys are sleeping during the meet. So I watched. And they would appear to be asleep until I said something dumb, and then they'd wake up at the same time. Start asking me questions that they already knew the answer to. And the first question was always, boy, that's what they call me. They didn't want to break my anonymity, see. So now, boy, who told you that? Well, you know, when I got here, I was smart. Nobody had to tell me anything. Matter of fact, I had some things I needed to tell you. Question number two was, can you find that in the big book? Well, I didn't have a big book. You don't need a big book unless you plan on staying sober. I just want people to leave me alone. And then question number three was the one I hated. Who's your sponsor? Well, I didn't have a sponsor. I don't like being told what to do. Why would I go out and purposely find somebody to tell me what to do? All my life I've been told what to do. Parents, school teachers, Sunday school teachers, telling me what to do. I've got a wife, she's telling me what to do. Highway patrol stopped me 5 times just to suggest that I do some things. Bankruptcy judge taking my money every month, he's telling me what to do. I've got more help than the average man needs. But they want me to hire somebody else to tell me what to do. So we don't get started good, so I complained a lot. And had two or three of us just hanging around, bothering people in Alcoholics Anonymous, didn't plan on getting sober. So one night we were outside complaining about the old timers. I was convinced that these guys sat at home while I worked all day. Most of them were retired. And thought up hurtful stuff to say to me when I came to the meeting. So we were outside complaining about it. Smoking cigarettes. Everybody smoked back then. Everybody I thought smoked back then. And we were passing our cigarette around. Old timers, you'd had a whole pack. They smoked just one. And this guy walked up behind us. You know, old timers don't make much noise. So why you complain? He walks up. We're complaining about the judges, the lawyers, the DWIs, the highway patrol, our wives, the bosses. And this guy said something that I don't think I'll ever forget. He said, now, boy, I ain't been charged with drunk driving since I quit drinking. I said, man, that is profound. I had never connected drunk driving with drinking. I just thought I had bad luck. I thought they picked on me. And so now I'm thinking, I'm beginning to get an education here. One night, I met A.D. A.D.'s dead now, but A.D. had a way of doing things. And A.D. was so comfortable. He's from Eden, North Carolina, way out in the sticks. Wore bib overalls to meetings with a sport coat. I said, man, I don't want to be that serene. He comes walking across the floor. I guess he looks like he's glad to see me. Found out he was. He comes walking up and he says, boy, it's good to see you. We've diagnosed your problem. I'm thinking, well, it's about time. I knew what he was going to tell. He was going to say, Dennis, you're young, gifted, and black. Sure, you drink a little bit. And everybody in the world hates it because you're so gifted. He didn't say that. A.D. said, now, boy, you seem to be suffering from malnutrition between the ears. He said, well, you know. He said, you need some soul food. I had no idea what he was talking about. You know, I didn't go to treatment. I didn't get to taper off alcohol on Librium and Valium and all that other good stuff I heard about later on. I just ended up in Alcoholics Anonymous, so I was a little slow. I was mowing my lawn about 2 weeks later, and it hit me. I said, I believe A.D. called me stupid. I had to shut that lawnmower down and think about that thing. That bothered me so bad, I had to call my sponsor. I called Ivy. I said, Ivy, AD called me stupid. He said, Dennis, that was 2 weeks ago. I said, well, I just figured it out. But it took me a while to appreciate that exchange. Turns out AD didn't call me stupid after all. AD had a way of getting my attention. AD later on became very instrumental in my early sobriety. But AD had recognized something about Dennis Nance that Dennis Nance didn't know. He had recognized something about Dennis Nance that everybody that knew me at that time knew. And I couldn't see it. AD had recognized the fact that I was consumed by the illness of alcoholism. The only way I could feel good is by picking up the very thing that made me feel bad. The way I solve my problems is by picking up the very thing that would intensify the problem. The way I dealt with trouble is by picking up and using the very thing that would create more trouble. But I couldn't see that. And see, that's why I need Alcoholics Anonymous. That's why I need a home group. That's why I need a sponsor. That's why I need to be surrounded by people who love me and know me well enough to tell me what they see. Because I can't see myself as I really am sometimes. I thank God for the inventory steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Were it not for that, I don't think that I would have any idea how Dennis Nance appears and interacts with the world at large. So this program has been good for me. It's been good for me because my life did not change significantly until I began to make some effort to take these steps under the guidance of a sponsor and continue to use the principles of this program to live my life day by day. These guys suggested some things. I thought they hated me, but turns out they loved me more than I ever knew. They outlined a program of action for me. Now, I didn't like it. But at that time, I was too scared to do anything but follow instructions. And that's a good place for Dennis Nance to be. They sent me, back then, they didn't tell you don't drink and go to meetings. They tell you don't drink and tell me exactly what meetings to go to. And I get to that meeting, they're on the back row again. I believe they sat there all day just to beat me there. They had me going to all speaker meetings except one. I got to go to one discussion meeting on Tuesday night. It was a step study. Out of the 12 and 12, they said, Dennis, we know you're smart. You take your 12 and 12, but don't you say anything. And later on, they told me, they said, we don't know anybody, we want anybody to know us yet. You know, we got reputations to protect. But going to these speaker meetings, I began to hear something that I had not heard before. See, up until that time, I was one to complain. Why did I go to these meetings? I hear the same thing all the time. I don't know where these people came from, but all of them seem to drink in the same bar, same pattern. Some of them even married to the same people. I just heard the same thing, but I realize now the reason why I heard the same thing because I sat there listening with the same attitude. If I didn't want to be there, it doesn't make any difference who's talking. I'm going to hear the same thing. But I begin to hear something different. When I begin to hear these things, I begin to identify with the condition that I heard you describe. I'll tell you what I heard. I heard the onset. I heard the problem. I heard the solution, but the most important thing I heard was the program of action that brings about that solution. And that's the reason I go to Alcoholics Anonymous today. I go looking for the onset, the problem, the solution, and how you use this program to bring about that solution. Life began to change for me. I began to recall some of the things, and my memory was short back then. I could not remember the last 2 years of my life. I found my way around town with an AA schedule and a city map. And in my first couple of years of sobriety, I learned my way around home. But I was born in Shelby, North Carolina. That's where we got the mail. I was about six miles out of town. I was born on a 13-acre cotton farm, and I knew immediately I was in the wrong place because I was supposed to be born to a rich white family in the Bronx, New York. And here I find myself in the middle of 13 acres of cotton. The thing I remember is I just felt uncomfortable with me. I had three sisters before my brother came along. And these sisters always had the pastel dresses, got their hair done. Got their hair done every Saturday night. And, you know, they quote that little poem to me. What a little girl's made out of. What a little girl's made out of. Sugar, spice, and everything nice. Now, you know what I was made out of. Frog, snails, and puppy dog tails. Now, I didn't know what that deal was, but I didn't want to be made out of that stuff. Matter of fact, I was scared of some of that stuff. Started having problems right off the bat. See, two of these sisters were so gifted, they started school in the second grade. One was skipped to the third and then moved back to the second. I didn't get skipped. Not a bit. But before I started the school, problems started. I ended up doing eye exercises all the time. Look up, look down, look around. I had these old welfare glasses. Started wearing glasses when I was 5 years old. I really hadn't figured that out yet because I couldn't read. Now, I don't know what they wanted me to see so bad, but I had these glasses. The kind with the old hook handles and the weak hinges that never tighten up on me. And still couldn't see. I learned later on I had a weak muscle in my left eye. And I didn't know I had the weak muscle in my left eye until I got to the first grade. And I sat in front of a guy named Albert Chambers, and he just smiled at me all day. I said, well, I'm making friends. And finally, about 2 o'clock, he leaned over the table and said, do that again. I said, I didn't know what I did. See, I'd look up, and my eye would look back down. I'd look over here, look back over there, you know. So I said, do what? He said, make your eye do that again. So I had to go home and figure out what was wrong with my eye. And I've got a lot of school pictures where I'd take my school picture and they'd say smile, and I'd smile. One eye fly open, the other one closed. So I got a lot of one-eyed early childhood pictures there. And, matter of fact, I had to quit drinking in bars because of that eye. That was the first thing that got drunk when I got drunk. And my last bar drinking was in a place called Gastonia, North Carolina. I was in basic training, came home from the Army, and I'm drinking. And there's always a short person in the bar drinking. Midgets will not let a man my size enjoy a good drunk. They got to mess with me. So I'm drinking. There's a guy on the other end of the guy. I guess he's about 4'6". And I'm kind of offended because they don't serve Thunderbird wine by the drink anyway, you know. And my drink of choice. And I'm drinking. He's drinking. I guess my eye starts looking at him. So he makes it his business to get off his bar stool, walk all the way around to my bar stool, to ask me the question that starts the fight. It always starts with the same question. What are you looking at? I tell him the truth. I look, man, I don't have any idea what I'm looking at. I used to think I knew what I was looking at. So I get thrown out of the bar for beating up on little people. So I figure best thing to do is get a feel for wine and go home. Just less trouble. But now, I started having trouble. You know, I think that I was raised in a good Baptist family, good Christian family. Dad was superintendent of Sunday school. Mom was a supportive wife. We were kind of like the Black Waltons. It took us about 90 minutes to go to bed. Good night, Dennis. Good night, Janet. Good night, Linda. Good night, Lola. Good night. And Mom and Dad would often sit in the bedroom while the 7 of us kids prayed aloud. Beautiful groaning. We were taken to church every Sunday. Wasn't sin. But I believe even in that setting, I began to perfect the very character defects that would keep me consumed by the illness of alcoholism for years. The first thing I learned in Sunday school is how to manipulate the old folk. I learned how to act like they wanted me to act, say what they wanted me to say, do what they wanted me to do, until they quit looking. I did what I wanted to do. Well, Dad had long arms and fat fingers, and he could thump you into a coma. Bam, you know. Hey, you know, it's just kind of like coming out of a blackout. You just come to and say, well, I guess I'll try harder next time. Never once did I think about following instructions. I just have to try harder next time. The second thing I learned to do is memorize things. I learned to memorize those Bible lessons. And if you're active in church, you know about it. Every 3 or 4 years, those lessons kind of repeat themselves. Doesn't take long for me. Now, I think that those two character defects are probably my worst liabilities today. Because, you know, been around the program long enough to know how to act when you're looking. Sometimes I'm on the road weeks at a time. This coming week, one of those weeks, well, I'll be in and out of the office every day except one day. When I do that, sometimes I miss my home group. Sometimes I miss my Monday night 6 o'clock meeting. I'll slide in and make alternate meetings. Dennis, how you doing? Doing fine. Knowing that I'm exhausted. Hadn't seen anybody that needs to see me in 2 or 3 days. And that's a dangerous place for me to be. Then the discussion meeting starts. And I start memorizing, calling to memory stuff that sounds good in Alcoholics Anonymous, except what I really need to share. And you've heard the book. You've heard it read. They didn't read it tonight, but you've heard it read many times. It doesn't say rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly memorized our book. It's follow the path. And see, that's what gets me in trouble. I've always wanted to look good. You don't want necessarily to live good. You don't want to follow instructions. Just wanted to look like I was doing right. Well, times started getting worse. You know, that was back during the days of the afros and the dashiki. Right at the in right at the beginning of the civil rights movement. But see, Dad didn't like afros. Matter of fact, Dad didn't like giving up money either. So Dad used to cut my hair with a pair of those Sears and Roebuck clippers, you know. Kind of sound like a Harley Davidson sometimes, you know. I was in the Army before I knew haircuts didn't have to hurt. He'd been pulling my hair out all those years. Never could get it right. He'd get it thick on one side, thin on the other side. And Mom, you know, Mom didn't have any brothers. Only had one uncle. Died when I was real small. So on that side of the family, I'm the second male in a couple of generations. She'd come along and say, Eldred, why don't you put a part in his hair? Like the other boys. And Dad was an old farm boy. Had most of a seventh grade education. He just put it in there. Well, Eldred, that's crooked. Can you straighten that out, son? You just change hands. So I end up either with a part that wide or 2 or 3 of those little zits in my head. And back then, it was not cool to have a one-sided haircut and 2 or 3 parts in your head. I was ahead of my time. All I need was a pair of those big pants and pull them down. You're all right. But back then, it wasn't cool to look like that. So here I am, 11 or 12 years old, and I didn't know it then, but I needed a good drink of liquor. But we're right on the verge of the civil rights movement, and I'm getting old enough now where I'm more uncomfortable with me. I'm wearing size 12 shoes in the seventh grade, and hiding them under the desk in front of me. And, you know, we missed the civil rights movement in Shelby. See, in Shelby, we blacks and whites picked cotton together. We shopped together. We worked together. We played together. You know, we didn't know we were supposed to hate each other. See, we had missed the civil rights movement because we were picking cotton when the news came on, so we didn't get to see it. So, the school's integrated, no big deal to me, except I was already uncomfortable. I was uncomfortable around other black people. We had a farewell party in eighth grade. And I remember feeling just so out of touch with reality. The first thing I learned is that I was not cool like the rest of the black guys were cool. Because they had cool walks. You know, black guys get about 12 or 13, they dip a little bit when they walk. I don't do that. I've been pulling that cotton sack and it took the dip out of my hip. And then took the glide right out of my stride. And they could dance. I couldn't dance. But if I looked long enough, I think I'd learn how to. And about the time I got learned, about ready to make my move, the party was over. But they were listening to strange music. Martha Reeves and the Vandellas, The Temptations, Gladys Knight and the Pips. I hadn't heard any of that stuff. I'd been laying in the bathtub on Saturday night listening to a country music station out of Gaffney, South Carolina. I'd been listening to Convoy 20 and the Tweety Birds. Merle Haggard and the Strangers. And nobody told me a soul brother's supposed to listen to soul music. So I'm 13 years old. And I'm black and I'm not cool. And I'm a soul brother, I don't have soul. But now that summer, I found something that would do the trick. Had my first drink of alcohol. We were playing basketball in my best friend's backyard. We didn't have any air conditioning, so we hid in the corn crib, cool in there. And while we were laying up there on that corn, we discovered some of Grandpa's liquid corn. Oh, yes, indeed. He drank Old Crow and Kentucky Gentleman. We became gentlemen that day. But, you know, just two Baptist boys having fun. We laid up in the corn crib and drank Grandpa's liquor. Now, Grandpa was watching wrestling. And he's one of these people that got excited about his wrestling. He's whoo, 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 watch, and move a little furniture, you know. So we knew where he was. We laid out there and listened to him, drank his liquor. After about 5 or 10 minutes, I got that burning sensation down my throat to my navel. Kneecaps got to tingling. I felt those old size 13s draw up to 8s like everybody else's. You know? I could feel that old haircut dead center. Oh, those parts didn't bother me at all. I just sling it to the side like everybody else. You know? Man, this is all right here. But you know, instinctively, we knew that it was immoral, if not illegal, for two Baptist boys to feel that good on Saturday afternoon. So we hid under the plum bushes between the house and the church and talked about what we'd do about those, if the Bentley girls came across the field, and they didn't. And we didn't get to do it. I didn't miss nothing because I didn't know how to do it. But I knew I had to have some more of that stuff. Didn't know how I was going to get it. My next encounter with alcohol, I made some myself. Got big enough to threaten those girls, keep them in line. Make my little brother agree not to tell it on me. And I boiled some wild cherries up and let it cool and poured it in 2 mason jars. I knew it had to ferment. Now, I couldn't figure out this fermentation process. That had me stunned, but I knew that alcohol would not get in it while you were looking. It had to be dark. I knew that much. So I dug a hole in the backyard, covered that stuff up. Sat on the back porch and stared at it for about 5 minutes. Said, it's ready now. Went and got one and drank. Had to strain to drink that stuff. Took me about a 2-day process, but I finally got frustrated and poured a little rubbing alcohol in that last one. Couldn't figure out how to get it started. Now, that didn't produce a high. It did produce the worst case of gas I ever had in my life. But I think I'm one of those people. who just the thought of drinking kind of distorts my thinking. One definition I saw, and I like it, by the way, in an old dictionary I used to have, defined sober as characterized by reason, sanity, and self-control. It appears to me in looking back, just the thought of drinking is proof enough to me that my ability to reason is gone before I even consider that first drink. I started to high school on a college preparatory track expecting to play basketball. Didn't know coaches were looking at me. But over the course of my high school career, I drank myself out of the athletic program in 2 years. Drank myself off a school bus route in a year and 19 days. Drank myself from that college preparatory track to a vocational track to a general track, and barely got out of high school fast-talking teachers and getting people to do more work for me. While I shoplift, drank, and visited other school campuses, I was confronted with my alcoholism 4 times in my last 2 weeks of high school. First, by an English teacher, Lois Sorrells. That's back when teachers knew your family, knew your parents, knew your siblings. Said, "Dennis, I think you have a drinking problem." She opened her book, showed me my attendance record. She had taught me 3 or 4 years of English and said, "Dennis, I think you're work has deteriorated. It's gotten worse since your freshman year." And I'm thinking, you're supposed to be teaching high school. Let me take care of the drinking. What do teachers know anyway? She's an adult, she's a teacher, and she's a preacher's daughter. 3 strikes, you're out. But you know, the next people that said anything about my drinking were 17 years old, just like me. The first one was Sylvia Spears, another preacher's daughter, by the way. Said, "Dennis, I think you're alcoholic." Now, I've never been called alcoholic before. I've been called lazy. I've been called a bum. I didn't mind being called a wino. But I didn't like being called an alcoholic. But she did my history homework, and I graduated. Then there was Linda Lowe, who actually penned in my annual, "Dennis Nance, you're a nice guy. Stay off the booze, and everything will be okay." And then there was Janice Morgan. Janice Morgan has always been the moral conscience of the class. Honest, blunt, forthright. If you wanted the truth, go see Janice. Nobody goes to see Janice. Janice is 55 years old and still ain't married. Sometimes you tell the truth too much, you know. Janice wrote in my annual, "Dennis Nance, someday reality will hit you in the face and you won't know what to do." That's pretty strong stuff for 17-year-old kids. You know, it took me 10 more years of drinking to see Dennis Nance like they saw him. That's why I need Alcoholics Anonymous. That's why I need a home group. That's why I need a sponsor. That's why I need to be focused on implementing the principles that's contained in these steps into my life on a daily basis. Because I just can't seem to see myself as I really am. So I need to safeguard my thinking, safeguard my actions by doing those things that the program demanded that I do. I graduated from high school knowing not, had no idea what I was going to do. I was angry at everybody. Had 2 more sisters coming up. One was a mathematician. I think she drinks a little bit too. The other one was a tall, left-handed basketball player, stayed in the paper all the time, making me look bad. And I remember them saying, "Dennis, you'd never be able to join the Army because your eyes are too bad." I went to see my local recruiter. He told me I had the best eyes he had seen in 2 or 3 months. Man, I came home with my papers in my pocket. Dad sitting on the front porch. So, yeah, I get them back now. I'll teach them to treat me like this. Complaining about me crawling in the bathroom when they're drunk. Complaining about me bringing the car home on empty. Complaining about me losing my house keys. Just won't treat me right. I said, "Dad, I joined the Army." I said, son, that's good. You're not doing anything else. How about you go and tell your mother? I'm thinking, it didn't hurt his feelings at all. Maybe I made a bad decision here. You know? And so I tell my mama, joined up. Mom starts crying. No, you didn't. I give her the papers. She starts crying, rolling all over that bed, having fits. That's a teacher to mess with me. Yeah. I go back and sit on the edge of my bed and listen to her. That's right. I bet they'll miss me now. 4 weeks later, I was down at Fort Jackson. Hollering, crying, rolling all over my bed. I'm in bad shape. Done a whole bunch of it. I think I'm one of those people. It's clear to me now that I think God had his hands on me from the beginning. Stayed on active duty 8 years. Had 6 months in Vietnam. Came home, married labor. We'd had a son while I was stationed in Vietnam. Got married, went out to Oklahoma, and unknowingly began to do those things that alcoholic families do. Fuss, fight, argue over the paycheck, chase each other with the butcher knife. I mean, we lived like that for so long that we actually had to learn how people loved each other, treated each other in Alcoholics Anonymous. We were shaking your hands, hugging you, and saying I love you to you a long time before we were doing to each other at home. We actually had to learn to love each other again in Alcoholics Anonymous. I remember sitting behind a guy named Bill C. Bill and K. Bill had a pair of khaki pants and a yellow shirt. Weejins with no socks. He was slouched down. And as the meeting began, K began to play with his hair in the back. That's when he had hair. He's like me now. He had hair. And I sat there looking at that wonder. I said, I wonder if Libra and I will ever be able to love each other like that. It's happened. Well, after 8 years in the Army, I remember coming back from Germany in June of 1977, completely debt-free. We had paid our bills off. Approximately 2 years later, I have drank this family into bankruptcy. I've drank away a military career. And I had made Sergeant First Class in 8 years. If I had stayed in 12 years, I could only be promoted to the enlisted rank in the enlisted ranks two more times. It's evident to me that I would have made at least Command Sergeant Major. Drank it away. So now, looking back, I had begun to get drinking-related infractions of the law. See, when I came back from Germany, when I came back from Vietnam, I went into the nuclear surety program. And that's why I stayed on the Czechoslovakian border for 40 months. I was a nuclear weapons artillery gun chief. My job was to launch that round, and we were pretty good at it, at least on a practice basis. But you can't be in nuclear weapons and be alcoholic. Can't be a drill sergeant and be alcoholic. So I got my first DWI. They shipped me to Europe so I wouldn't be convicted. Well, I had three more drinking-related infractions over there. I was eventually fined $50 for driving a brand new car into a lake. They thought that I might just be a little alcoholic if I drove a brand new car into a lake. That didn't seem to make sense to them. But I got a total of five of these infractions. But because I had not been convicted, my sick mind told me that I didn't do it. There are two things that are clear to me about my alcoholism. I clearly see that as my alcoholism progressed, two things happened. Number one, my capacity to be honest deteriorated. And my concept of God deteriorated. When I got here, I thought it was out to get me. But I couldn't see that I was the problem. So here I am, I'm living my last time. I have one final. I'm finishing up a tour on drill sergeant status at Fort Sill, Oklahoma. Up until this time, we had bought some land in North Carolina, thinking we might come back. We had bought a house in Oklahoma. We had one new car, one used car, two kids, all American family, nice military career going. But alcoholism has taken all of that. So I'm living one final time. The Army's way of getting rid of me is to send me to Korea for 13 months, unaccompanied. Well, I'm at the end of my enlistment. I said, well, I'm not going. Well, I informed Libra of that, and Libra says, well, I want a divorce. So I'm really up for two discharges at the same time, really, you know. So I start preparing for both of them. Bought Libra home, Shelby, North Carolina. I go back to Oklahoma, do my last 45 days in the Army. And I begin to see that my drinking is as bad or worse with Libra and the children gone as they are with them with me. I begin to think I just might be the problem. A kind gentleman kept that house from going into foreclosure. We salvaged $4,400 out of a $21,000 house. I sent Libra $1,300 of that money, and I woke up out of what I know now to be my first recognizable blackout, 50 miles from home, driving that car along at the edge of a wheat field. I came back to North Carolina in good drunk fashion, drinking Thunderbird wine and writing bad checks. Had a line of them right down I-40. Got back, and Libra's not real understanding in her pre-Al-Anon state. Just doesn't react like I think she should. She says, I'm waiting to hear, Dennis, how are you doing? She says, where's the money? I can't tell her where the money is. I don't understand blackouts. She thinks I'm lying. She gets in the other car. She says, well, that's okay. I got a house in Greensboro. I'm leaving you. And she got in the car and she left. And I got in the other car and followed her. You know, if you're going to leave me, I'm going to see you do it all the way. So we end up in Greensboro. 2 more years of that madness in Greensboro, North Carolina. Eventually, we're invited home for Thanksgiving dinner in 1980. Now, I didn't know it at that time, but what I'm really invited home for is what we're going to do with Dennis meeting, you know. And in the middle of Thanksgiving dinner, somehow they asked me about seeing the local minister, new minister at the home church. And somebody might have mentioned something about going to an alcoholism treatment center for veterans or something. Big old family fight broke out. And I woke up out of what I know now to be my second recognizable blackout, headed north on 85. You know, if you can't too drunk to argue, the only way to win is leave. So, for some reason that night, I begin to remember when we were stationed in Germany in 1975. Libra's uncle, who was the town drunk when we were growing up, had gotten sober in this strange thing called Alcoholics Anonymous. Nobody knew much about it. They just knew that Dan was sober. He'd gone back to school. He was employed. He had driver's license. Had a woman. And he was working in the college community in Chapel Hill. As a matter of fact, Dan had a big, huge station wagon that he picked us up, came down and hauled some of the bags in. We came from Germany. And I'm thinking, when I get back, I'm going to ask Dan about this thing called alcoholism. But I got home, I didn't need to ask Dan. You know, I knew I could quit myself. Dan called me. Dan came by. He was in a town nearby, and trying to be nice. I was cooking Sunday dinner thinking that I might have to eat it myself because I'm knowing by this time, well, Libra will leave and I'll never see the kids again. So Dan shows up and says, Dan, come on in and make yourself at home. Don't tell drunks that if you don't mean it. Because Dan just took off his shoes, laid down on my couch, went to sleep. Man, I hated that. Then I go out and check my car on the way back in, and I notice in Dan's car is old faded out big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. Had a bunch of AA pamphlets around it. Matter of fact, had one pamphlet on there on black alcoholism. I said, man, I didn't know it had colors. So I went in. Dan said, Dan, tell me about this thing called alcoholism. Dan talked for what seemed like 2 hours. I thought he never shut up. Finally, he said, Dennis, if I dial a number, will you talk? I said, Big Dan, if you just shut up, I'll talk. That's all I need. Just shut up. So I ended up in this guy's office at 9 o'clock Monday morning. Another one of these talking guys. His name was James Lanier. He's dead now. He talked with me freely about his alcoholism. He was dressed nice. Clean shaven. Mustache, just a little line. Like the Godfather. Tan shoes, gray pants, his socks matched. I didn't trust people to dress like that. He gave me a little 20-question test, and I passed that test. Didn't even study for it. And, man, I said, I still got it. But I was uncomfortable with people talking about themselves like that. We didn't talk. I just didn't talk about getting locked up, getting DWIs, you know, neglecting your family, abusing your kids. We didn't talk about stuff like that. I wanted out of that. It was uncomfortable. But before I could get out, he said, Dennis, wait a minute. If you're going to stay sober, you're going to need this book. And that's what I wanted. That big, pretty book I saw y'all with. I go home, read the book, lay across my bed, and I'd have to go to these meetings like you poor folk because I was not that bad. You know, I just had, you know, had to drink a little, once, a little bit every once in a while. But then before I could get to the door, a little lady named Rosalie Clemens just wouldn't mind her own business. Well, James, are you going to ask him? I said, oh, man, maybe I want some money. But they asked me, so Dennis, will your wife and your children come into counseling? Oh, man, I knew they would. I didn't want them to. Because Libra, anybody that wants to know about my drinking, I know Libra would be glad to tell them. And my kids were like 5 and 7 years old. You can't trust kids that young. They'll tell the truth if you're not careful. I didn't want them down there telling the truth on me. But Libra went right into a couple of counseling sessions and right on into Al-Anon. I think Dennis slid into Alateen when he was about 9. Michelle was a little larger. Maybe she got in. She got in too early, I know that. But things changed immediately around the house. Libra got a little bossy. Dennis, I'm going to Al-Anon. And if you want to go to a meeting or anywhere else, you take care of the kids. It's about time you do that. You're their father. But my tactic was to start an argument, smart off, and then while she's crying, I'd just back out of the driveway, go home, stay out all night. But I'd smart off, she'd never say a word. She'd just get in the car and leave, go to Al-Anon. Now that went on for a couple of months or so. Then she got a little more aggressive. Dennis, I'm going to Bonnie Doon. What's Bonnie Doon? That's Al-Anon retreat. How much does that cost? She'd tell me. I said, Libra, we can't afford that. She said, Dennis, I've been living with you. Can't afford not to. She got in the car and left. Man, it's getting bad here. Sometime later on, Dennis, I want to go to White Oak. Well, what's White Oak? It's Al-Anon retreat. Well, don't y'all have any meetings like we do? How much does that cost? She'd tell me. Libra can't afford that. Can't afford not to. Gone. Get in the car and leave. So I'm having to sit at home with these little nail-biting discipline problems I've created. Which is not bad. The last thing I want to do is let Libra see me drink. And I know they're snitching on me. Heard Shell say one time, Mama, Daddy's drinking marijuana. You can't trust kids like that. So we moved one time. She said, the people that were help Daddy move were drinking, but Daddy didn't drink now. I said, well, I know not to let them see me do anything. I started sneaking around AA meetings. I like that meeting that Thomas got. I like that seat Thomas got by the door. And I like it when he's got the door and the coffee pot and the donuts all in one corner. Because grocery was low at my house, you know. But I sat there for about 2 weeks in Alcoholics Anonymous. I begin to feel sorry for y'all. Your palace over alcohol in your life had become unmanageable. See, I was palace over money. And folk just wouldn't leave me alone. So I couldn't take step one. Step two offended me. It implied that my behavior, if not my thinking, if not both, might be insane. But I don't think I'm insane. I don't see anything insane about my life. Everybody parks the car two blocks up the street so the repo man can't find it. That's survival. That doesn't have anything to do with insanity. Everybody sleeps in the backyard a little bit when you can't get the key in the door. That's just survival. Well, I can't stake three because it's got God in it. And I just ain't ready to deal with God. I know y'all trying to sneak around and save my soul. You know, I just want to quit drinking. But step four looked like something I could do. Maybe I can write a little bit. I used to be pretty good at writing in school, so I started writing. You know, but people won't mind their business. You go to the Monday night meeting. So Dennis, you've been around a while. Have you got a sponsor yet? No, I haven't got a sponsor yet. But Dennis, you need to get a sponsor, because the way we stay sober is we take these steps under the guidance of a sponsor. I said, well, I'm already taking the steps. I'm on step four. So Dennis, you need to quit writing. Quit writing right now. And you get a sponsor. So I quit writing. I come back to the meeting next Monday. I'm making one whole meeting a week. There she is again. Have you got a sponsor yet? No. What about James? No, I can't do James. James 6'9", 300-something pounds. His afro is bigger than me, you know. Can't sponsor me. Come back a third night, Dennis. Have you got a sponsor yet? Nope, but I'm getting ready to get a home group. I'm going over to the east side where they don't bother people about sponsorship all the time, you know. I go to the east side, and I walk in, there's Margaret Galloway. Boy, you ain't mean. Have you got a sponsor? I said, man, well, how are they telling everybody? Then Lever begins asking, Dennis, have you got a sponsor yet? They say you're supposed to have a sponsor. Man, they're about to drive me to drinking about this sponsorship thing, you know. But I can't go to the liquor store either, because I'm scared the liquor store clerk is in on this deal. You know? So look here, buddy, I see you got a couple of fists of Thunderbird here. I don't think you got a sponsor, do you? And I said, I can't find anybody to sponsor me. Nobody measures up to my standards. Nobody cool enough. Nobody black enough. Nobody have O positive blood. No Vietnam veterans. Got to qualify now. So I sponsored myself for 81 days. Easiest time I've ever had in Alcoholics Anonymous. I just went to meetings when I wanted to. Read the big book when I didn't want to. Didn't take this. Life is good when you sponsor yourself. You know, I look at that old answering machine. I said, I think I'm going to pawn that sucker. Nobody calls when you sponsor yourself. Well, I had good sponsorship because my sponsorship led me to my last drunk. Me and my sponsor ended up 140 miles from home, drunk and naked. Life is good when you sponsor yourself. February 1st, 1981, I end up back on the doorsteps of Alcoholics Anonymous. These old guys are still sitting on the back row. They invited me to a meeting after the meeting, and I went to that meeting because I felt good about it. Maybe they've recognized my leadership ability. And I got there, and I found out I was the subject of the meeting. And best conversation I've ever had. They asked me directly about my drinking. They talked to me about prayer and meditation. A lady named Flora introduced me to a 24-hour day book. Told me how she started her day and ended her day with prayer and meditation. Suggested that I do the same. I started that night utilizing prayer and meditation. I left that meeting with a sponsor. They gave me Ivy. Ivy went to meetings every night. Told me where to meet him. I met him there. He was unemployed, unemployable, lived with mama. Last drunk was on wintergreen alcohol. Now I said, this guy is crazy. Filled up my car with literature, drove me all over Central North Carolina. I said, I've got to get away from this sucker. And he missed a meeting. I went back to the old times. I said, look, Ed Ivory's crazy. He goes to meetings all the time, got a car full of literature. He can't sponsor me. He's crazy. They said, you crazy. That's why you got him. You got Ivy. Ivy insisted that I take the steps. After Ivy was satisfied that I took step three, he sent me to a guy named Lou. And they passed me around. Lou worked with me to step 9, and they sent me to AD. AD was not impressed at all. AD took me through the steps again, set me down in his living room on Wednesday nights and taught me what he knew of the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. He said, boy, if you stay sober, you'll sponsor people. And if you don't ensure that they take these steps, if you don't teach them what you know of the book, Alcoholics Anonymous, if you don't teach them the importance of giving back, you might cheat them out of the only chance they'll ever have of getting sober. So if you can't sponsor people like you sponsored, Dennis, you need to get them to somebody who can. They deserve the best chance possible of getting sober. And I've had to do that. Turns out these guys love me more than I ever knew. They taught me the value of keeping a sponsor. They taught me the value of making meetings, taught me the value of taking these steps and living my life based on the principles in these steps. What a blessing. Today, life is better than I ever thought possible. Never thought I'd be married 36 years. Never thought I'd be on the same job 18 years. Never thought I'd go back to college and complete a degree and a master's degree. Not because I'm smart, but because people in Alcoholics Anonymous seem to realize my potential and said, boy, this is what you need to do. I even heard an old guy whisper to my wife one time at a Saturday night meeting. He said, now look, if that boy gives you any trouble, you call me. And I'm thinking, what's a 72-year-old man going to do with a young, energetic man like myself? And then I thought, you know, that guy's been sober 30 years. He might call GSO and have my sobriety revoked. I better leave him alone. My children are pretty responsible adults today. You know, on my AA birthday, I get calls from both of them. One of the most beautiful things, one of my most cherished blessings, I just want to share this with you. I've reestablished my relationship with my mother. Being able to see my mother through the death of my 3 oldest sisters. Never thought I'd outlive them. Have 3 beautiful grandkids today. There's Naomi. Naomi looks like Libra. Proud to tell you, she's the oldest. Looks like her grandma, and she's in charge. Got home from a meeting one night. She says, Friday night, and she called me Big D, like my friends call me. Hey, Big D, been to one of those meetings, ain't you? But the very next night, she gets in trouble again. She says, Papa, we're going to have ice cream and cake after supper. I said, okay. She said, but I've looked around, and we don't have any ice cream and cake. I said, okay. So I understand. Then she says, so I'll go with you to get some. And, I said, you're going to make a fine Al-Anon one of these days. Cute little Inez. Got that black smooth skin, that infectious smile, runs that mouth a mile of a minute nonstop. I'd pick him up on Friday, she'd talk all day Friday, talk all day Saturday. By Saturday afternoon, I'm tired of it. I ease in the bedroom, take me a nap. I wake up and Inez is on the side of the bed, talking. I go back to sleep. She wakes me up again with the left hand. Papa, don't go to sleep. She starts back talking. I start back sleeping. But the third time I wake up, and she's laying right on top of me, looking right in my eyes, watching me sleep. I say, girl, what are you up to now? She said, Papa, I like you. I said, girl, you just paid your college tuition, you know? Then there's Chris. Finally got a grandson. Now, this guy is a ball of energy. Now, when he was young, he'd come over to visit. And on the patio door, I noticed these little spots. I couldn't figure out what they were. Thought maybe I had snails crawling up. Found out he's been licking that patio window, you know, sitting there, got tongue marks all up. I realize now what I put my father and my grandfather through. This guy asks questions all the time. How do you fix this? How do you fix that? What's that about? Can I drive a tractor? He'll go to church, love Sunday school, sings a little bit. 6 years old, but after Sunday school is over, he's finished with church. He says, "Papa, let's go ride the tractor." "Can't ride the tractor, man. Can't cut grass on Sunday. We're going to stay here." "But Papa, can I pay your offering?" "Yeah, go ahead, take my offering." Comes back. "Papa, I want to ride the tractor." "So no, can't ride the tractor." Then I started thinking, well, this guy's 21, what's he going to remember? Is he going to remember those tractor rides? Or is he going to remember going to church? Then I started thinking, you know, a good Sunday morning tractor ride with the grandson is about the most spiritual thing I can think of. Get a lot of riding in while all these church people in church. I said, "Son, I believe I want to ride the tractor." "Well, we've gotten about too big to ride that tractor now. I had to get off of it and let him drive yesterday. And I've come to the conclusion that I'm going to have to drive by a bigger tractor. But we've got to do some riding. These are blessings that I would have missed were it not for you and people like you." And I think about those times, early years of Alcoholics Anonymous, when I sat in the middle of the solution complaining about the problem. Asking myself, why have I got to quit drinking at 27 years old? Am I going to be the only black man on the south side of town that cannot have a good time? What am I going to do if I live to be 80? Just sit around and not drink? My God, I had no idea life would be so busy. I think about people with illnesses like leukemia, incurable cancers, AIDS, brain tumors, illness from which they know they will die. If they could arrest their illness with a program like the one I've been introduced to, if all they had to do was come to meetings on a regular basis, take the steps, get a sponsor, utilize the God of their understanding, prayer and meditation, if that's all they had to do, they would do it willingly and without question. And here I've spent so much time, wasted time, sitting right in the middle of the solution, complaining about the problem. Now, regardless of what you think, that's the real reason I'm here tonight. That's the reason why I'm with you this weekend. I'd love for you to get something from this talk, but you know, I'm here to steal from you this weekend, just enough to make it through another 24 hours of sobriety. Thank you all, and God bless you.